wouldn't you tell you, whether it's, you know, lawyers, conveyances or otherwise, you know, what you're trying to achieve, so that, you know, that person enacting for you is really best placed to make sure you're going to get what you want out of that.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we'll continue the conversation with Tony Gallert. He's well established in the property legal world and regularly advises clients in investment properties. According to him, there is never a dull day in the office. Find out more helpful advice from Tony to help you achieve your property goals. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. According to Gallert, one of the common mistakes that investors find themselves in is with impulse purchases.
I guess the most obvious one is when we get the story on a Monday morning. Clients who've, over the weekend, were just walking past a particular property, saw that an auction was going on and decided to walk in and register, and next thing you know, put their hand up and they've walked away with a property that we've really done very little, if any, due diligence on.
Gosh. So how often does that happen, I wonder?
Come Monday morning, we get a contract saying, well, we've exchanged on this. Can you give us some advice? So it always makes me just sort of wonder and hope and pray that everything is going to work out for them. But again, it's something that's beyond our control when they walk in on a Monday morning. So look, it doesn't happen a whole lot. But having said that, it's certainly, you know, every other month we'll have a typical situation like that. Look, some of those people will be a little bit more sophisticated, so they're able to manage it themselves. But just, I guess, to take it back to basics, if, you know, a particular client's going to be interested in making a potential property purchase, first thing is going to be, from our point of view, at least when we get involved, is generally getting hold of a contract to review so we can advise them about the nature of that property, at least from a legal sense. So let's take a unit, let's say a strata unit as an example. One of the first things on top of actually looking at the contract will be getting them to, well, at least we would advise them to do what's referred to as a strata report. Which is really a proxy or the equivalent of, if you take a standalone house, doing a building and pest inspection. So you're trying to get a sense of just the bones of the place to whatever degree you can. So effectively what a strata report will do is look through the strata records and then give you a report so you know, well, is the building about to collapse? Are they about to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a new lift or new concrete cancer throughout the building? And is that why the vendors basically looking to exit before there are a whole lot of special levies that are going to be struck and the owner's going to be lumped with.
Gallert stresses that the devil is in the detail. His team regularly reviews special conditions to ensure that their clients are getting the right deal.
From a legal point of view, we'll look at the contract and make sure that what they're going to actually get on title, for example, is there a car space? Which lot are they actually looking to buy, and making sure that that's the one they've inspected. And then we'll advise them on a whole lot of, there'll always be a whole lot of special conditions in that contract, which we won't bore our clients everything with, but obviously we need to advise them in relation to, and they can be everything from things such as release of deposits, which again we generally recommend against, but some vendors will try to get a deposit released after an exchange so they can use it on a subsequent purchase, which we generally try and shy away from. And then obviously the main things from the client's point of view are things like settlement period, just making sure, for example, right now with the lead up to Christmas, so a standard settlement period is 6 weeks, at least here in New South Wales. So what we'll generally find is at this time of the year, you fast forward 6 weeks and we're basically talking early January, which generally banks aren't going to be too able to attend to things and from both sides. So we just need to know going in that either we're going to do a very short settlement before by mid-December, or are we talking a mid-January onwards settlement? So making sure that the vendor who's actually selling the property is on title, Again, in the yeast, we see a lot of deceased estates, and that can really blow out the settlement period because generally the vendors are the executors of that estate, and then they need to get on title, which relies on probate happening. So it helps being an estate firm as well, so we at least understand that process and we can advise our clients about what that process is. But look, having said that, we've had matters which literally have dragged on over a year because of an outstanding probate issue. And
can you
that
explain
can happen
what is a probate?
Yes, absolutely. So what happens is on the death of an individual, depending on how the holding is of that property, just go back to basics, which may be helpful for listeners. Property, let's say it's a husband and wife who are looking to buy a potential property, they will generally go on title as what's referred to as joint tenants. Now, joint tenants, the alternate to joint tenants is what's referred to as tenants in common, which will be more, if you like, if it's a business relationship, two people going into partnership together to buy a property in a syndicate-type situation, for example. So in the case of joint tenancy, the rule of survivorship is the main doctrine to be aware of. So what happens is on the death of any one of those spouses, the other spouse, effectively, their share gets enlarged and they end up the sole owner of that property. So what happens is the first person who's died, their estate and their will won't in any way have any reference to that title, that property, because what's happened is automatically the property is transferred into the sole ownership of the surviving spouse. Then when that surviving spouse dies, they will then, that property will form part of their estate on their death. And then if they've got a will in place, and we'd always recommend people to have a will in place, which is not involved, but if they're buying assets, it's worth having that in place for them. Once that will, let's say, says, look, hand over, you know, my balance of my estate to my son or daughter, for example, we need to transfer that property from the estate to the daughter. Now, there'll be someone referred to as an executor who's appointed under the will to effectively administer and transfer that property from the estate to the beneficiary, let's say the son or the daughter. And now the probate is the process by which the executor applies to the Supreme Court of New South Wales to be appointed under the Supreme Court as executor, be granted probate, and therefore be able to take the title to the property of the deceased estate, transfer it firstly into their own name as the executor, then potentially sell the property using a contract and the vendor is that executor, and then they can sign off the transfer to hand over the title either to, let's say, a beneficiary if it's being done directly, or if it's the sale of a property to a third party, you know, a potential buyer, then they're going to transfer it directly across to that buyer. The funds come back into the estate to be distributed to the beneficiary.
Oh, okay. So basically the executive becomes sort of the person in control of the estate until certain things have been sold or passed on to the beneficiaries. Or
that's exactly right. Because someone needs to sign the contract, someone needs to sign the transfer, transferring title to the new owner, the purchaser, that is the executor. And in order for an executor to be recognised by the Land Titles Office to have that authority, they need to have probate. And any property, any estate which has a property in it will require probate. Now, probate can take anywhere from a month to 6 months or longer to obtain from the Supreme Court, hence the potential delay in actually ending up with a purchaser. So what some estates will do, you would have, your listeners may have seen these two types of contracts where it's effectively the executors who are selling on behalf of the estate, but that the executors aren't actually yet on title. The title's still in the name of the deceased, and the intention is that through probate, they will then, by what's referred to as transmission application, the executors will go on title so they can transfer to the new owner.
So are there any sort of duties and taxes that they need to be paid between this kind of transfer? Say, for example, if as the husband and wife passed away and they're passing on to their children, do the children need to pay all these duties and taxes to be able to transfer into their name?
There is no sort of death duty, at least at this point, in terms of New South Wales law. So assuming, let's say, a particular property, as you say, let's say it's held by the mother of the children, generally they outlive the husbands, unfortunately. So, or fortunately, as the case may be. So let's say that, you know, under a will, everything is going to, let's say, the mother's daughter, for example. So on her death, that transfer under the will from the mum to the daughter would be free of duty. No duty implications. Now, there are other sort of capital gains tax implications which start arising after that point. So for the purpose of actually obtaining probate, they'll look to see, well, what's the value of the property as at the time of death, which is noted on the probate. And thereafter, that becomes that daughter's effective cost base. If she then sells the property subsequently, the capital gains that she will pay, if she's not leaving it as a primary residence, will be based on the probate value. So there is that tax implication, but that initial transfer has no duty implication.
So long-term wise, if you're planning for an estate, say, for example, you're buying lots and lots of properties into, for the family, it'd be smart to actually put it into a particular, asset, e.g. like a trust or a company or something like that. So that way, if you do pass in the future, it actually just gets transferred through that way. Or is it still okay to be purchasing it in under your own individual names?
Again, that's a whole world unto itself, and both accounting sort of implications as well as legal ones. But I guess in a simple matter, generally there's no issues with holding things individually. There may be other reasons from the point of view of asset protection, you know, for business ventures and otherwise, where you may not want to have properties held in your own name and want to use trusts, which can add that level of protection. At least at the present time, may not have the tax implications as well in terms of being able to distribute income coming out of those assets. So, again, there's a whole raft of things that arise. But certainly from a very simple basis of husband and wife buying a property in individual names, knowing that someday they'll want to hand that over to their kids through a will, whoever's the survivor, there is no duty implication. So at a simple level, that's fine. And where, I guess, the more complex you get, there's always going to be implications. So, for example, some people put in place what's called testamentary trusts in their wills for more complex matters. But again, that can have other unintended consequences. So, as with all these things, it's general advice. And always, in this particular situation, they should be getting the advice of their accountants and lawyers in unison, because there are implications, during your lifetime, and then there are other implications as more estate planning for later on, which need to be considered, because you're raising very good questions which need to be thought through at the time the purchases are being made.
According to Gallup, one of the first things you'll get asked by your lawyer is when the funds are coming in. This is crucial information to share, and it can assist you with making sure your interests are protected and the purchase goes smoothly.
First question we'll ask is where the funds are coming from for their potential purchase, which is an obvious one. But a lot of the case, most people won't have formal approval. They'll generally have what's referred to as pre-approval or conditional. I'm not a broker, so it's not our area, but we always need to advise people to say, the point is, at least in New South Wales, there are two ways to exchange contracts. Okay, one way is what's referred to as a conditional exchange. One way is an unconditional. So if you're in an auction setting, that's unconditional. So once you put up your hand up and you're the highest bidder and it's above a reserve, you're committed to that purchase. There's no getting out of that. Whereas if you do what's referred to as a conditional exchange, what that is all residential property in New South Wales outside of an auction setting, if you just properties for sale, you're often match the price, you pay your money, there'll be what's referred to as a 5 business day cooling off period. That gives you 5 business days to decide whether or not you actually want to proceed. And it's during that time that you may try and get your finance formally approved, get your valuations done, and that sort of thing. If after those 5 days, as the purchaser, you choose not to proceed, you would normally only forfeit 0.25% of the purchase price. And you can effectively walk. So you've got to know that, and in the alternative, you might have heard, or your listeners may have heard, what's referred to as the vendor requiring what's called a Section 66W certificate, which your lawyer signs, basically waiving your right to the cooling off period, which I've got to say, in the eastern suburb of Sydney, it's pretty rare that there'll be a conditional exchange. It'll either be an auction or they'll require a 66W from the lawyer to waive the right to the cooling off. Therefore, you need to have your finance basically sorted before you exchange is the fundamental point to make there.
Yeah, can you just elaborate a little bit more on that? You mentioned that it seems to be happening more in the eastern suburbs, because when I was working, say, for example, in North Ryde, Concord, around that kind of area, which is more sort of inner west slash, north of Sydney, so forth, I remember actually having to exchange, but they still had the 5-day cooling off period. Are you saying it's because this market, being more of a seller's market, contracts exchanging much faster, and that's the reason why?
This is exactly the point. So what happens is, and again, you know, we will have clients everywhere from Penrith, you know, through to the Sydney's east, and yeah, that's why as a general statement we'd say certainly it just doesn't happen around these parts where they're willing to do it. Because what happens is during that 5 business day cooling off, effectively the vendor's hands are tied. The purchaser, as I said, is potentially putting at risk 0.25%, but they may have 2 or 3 properties that they potentially are looking to do this with, just so they don't know if one's going to come off or otherwise. What happens to the vendor is obviously while their hands are tied, the purchaser decides to walk. And in the meantime, the vendor's lost whoever was that second highest bidder, if you like, because they've gone ahead and found some other property to purchase in the meantime. So vendors are very reticent to really commit and take the property off the market, knowing that the purchaser has every right to walk. And in the meantime, they've, you know, lost their next highest bidder. And it's just the way, in many ways, the agents sort of run, whether it's an auction, pre-auction, sort of, you know, these sort of Dutch auctions that sort of seem to happen quite a lot.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into Gullett's advice for people looking to buy a property.
It's important you tell you, whether it's, you know, lawyers, conveyancers or otherwise, you know, what you're trying to achieve, so that, you know, that person enacting for you is really best placed to make sure you're going to get what you want out of that.
His go-to resources.
They're interested in strata law. There'll be a whole lot of information, for example, on the Fair Trading website, which is a fantastic resource.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Are you looking at buying property in 2018? Would you like expert tips and advice on the best ways you can purchase property? Whether you're a new or experienced investor, learn from the experts by downloading the Property Investment Buying Handbook. It contains the best tips and advice from 37 of Australia's leading property experts. Simply text me your email address to 0499881040 to get your copy today. Gullett has dealt with a myriad of unusual situations in property, but tries to ensure that it's a win-win situation for both parties. He's sure to put the needs of his clients first.
One thing we really try and do, really, when we're acting for more vendors of properties is, as I may have mentioned, you know, for the most part, people are trying to lock in those potential, you know, purchases before they sell their properties. The alternate way to do it, which, again, can result in that real win-win, is where people do potentially want to sell their property first, but what we try to do is put in place these settlement periods where effectively they may be up to 6 months, for example. However, that the vendor would have the right to actually bring forward that settlement at their discretion. So that enables that seller of that property, for example, to go to market, sell their property. Now they've got effectively 6 months to find their next property, otherwise they're out on the street renting. But during that time, if they do turn up to an auction, successfully purchase another property, which maybe settles in 6 weeks, notwithstanding that they're not going to get their funds for 6 months, what they can do is bring forward that 6-month settlement to say, and basically put their buyer on notice that actually they're going to have to settle in that same 6-week period, so that then that, potential, both, you know, seller of their property as well as that next one they're buying can be matched up, and they're not having to look at, as I say, going down the route of bridging finance. So it's really going to work in their best interests. Now, obviously, that relies on a buyer for their property being prepared to wait up to 6 months, which, you know, they may not get their best offer. But in some situations, it's still, you know, in the sort of seller's interest, because it just allows them to have that flexibility and reduce that anxiety of just, you know, worrying that they're going to be out on the street, as it were.
Gullert and his team try to find the most practical solution for all your property needs. With their 50 years of experience, they can assist in any property circumstance.
So, and we try and take a very pragmatic view. Again, you know, referring back to my father's 50 years of experience, we're always trying to find the most practical outcome and where we can assist even the other party on the other side, just to get things done from their point of view, whether it's an estate type situation where we may have had a lot of experience. You know, we're always looking out for our client. And if they want a settlement to go through, we're not going to sit here and unduly delay it just because we may have a right to be able to do so under the contract. We'll obviously protect and enforce our client's rights where they require it. But in other scenarios, we'll always make sure we listen to it. And it's important you tell you, whether it's, you know, lawyers, conveyances or otherwise, you know, what you're trying to achieve so that, you know, that person enacting for you is really best placed to make sure you're going to get what you want out of that, you know, whether it's a simultaneous settlement, which is very stressful for some people. You know, they don't like that idea of effectively moving out of a property in the morning, having the removal truck with the engine running all day, waiting to hear whether settlement's gone through so they can move into their new house.
His recommended resources include his website, Law New South Wales, and the Department of Fair Trading.
Obviously, as a lawyer, Law Side of New South Wales has some you know, great resources out there, and just particular guides, and we're always obviously happy to send people information, some of those guides and that sort of thing, through our particular website, langellett.com.au. Certainly we've got some, you know, limited information on there, but beyond that we can always direct people the best way, and particularly if they're interested in strata law, there'll be a whole lot of information, for example, on the Fair Trading website, which is a fantastic resource if they're looking for ticks for tenancies. So there's this whole realm which we haven't even got into, is where properties, and this may be more pertinent to a lot of listeners, where they're looking to take on properties with existing tenancies in place as an investment property, it's probably going to be more relevant to them to know, for example, what are their rights about when they can terminate any particular tenant if they're looking to buy a property, or whether they have to, you know, wait out certain periods before they can maybe get rid of an existing tenant so that they're able to, let's say, do up a property to then get a higher yield for that property. So there's a whole range of negotiations which can go on, and all relating to the sale and purchase of a property, which can impact the amount of notice that you can give potential tenants. So Fair Trading has some great information on that. Just a very simple example of that, for example, is normally once the lease is expired, you have to give 90 days notice to a tenant. So obviously for a potential purchaser, they may have to wait 3 months before they can, let's say, get a tenant to vacate at a lower rent, redo a place and then rent it out at a higher yield. So to that end, if a property is under a contract for sale, provided the lease has expired and it's just an ongoing lease, what the purchaser can request, at least, of the vendor, is that vacant possession be given on settlement, and then the vendor is actually able to issue a 30-day notice. So that by the time of settlement, they get their property clear of tenants, they can redo it, do it up, and then get that higher yield 3 months earlier than they otherwise would be able to.
Yeah, that's really good and important advice.
That kind of information is, yeah, it's crucial to sort of, you know, go in knowing what you're trying to achieve, and therefore, again, you've got to sign all those things up, you know, well and truly beforehand.
If you wish to connect with Tony Gullert and his team, learn more about the legalities of property, you can reach out to him via his website and phone number, which can be found in the show notes.
So obviously, as I mentioned, our website, langellett.com.au, my email address, if they did want to contact me directly, which I'd most welcome, is tony@langellett.com.au. Alternatively, phone number, the old technology, 02-9389-7355. More than happy to take a call. Always make ourselves available. And yeah, I'd love to hear from some of your listeners.
Thank you to Tony Gullert, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about Tony Gullert's story, visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. Simply type in the search bar Tony Gullert and select that episode to learn more about his story. Also, are you looking at buying property in 2018? Would you like expert tips and advice on the best ways you can purchase property? Whether you're a new or experienced investor, learn from the experts by downloading the Property Investment Buying Handbook. It contains the best tips and advice from 37 of Australia's leading property experts. Simply visit propertyinveststory.com and subscribe to get your copy right now. Thanks for listening.